You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
I don't give a fuck about your war or your president.
Tell you the fight, 13 for support! Man, because the country is going to be at the war! Now I go for that! Now I go for that! It's when you're a free jack, don't you? No! Don't let us just abandon folks, guys!
You've got it here. It's Toilet Radio, Radio TOVH. It's Joe Thrash and Kill, your host, with me today, 365 Days of Horror. And we're recording this, let's see, today is Wednesday, and it's currently 6 p.m. Central Time. And from where I am in Austin, and from what I understand where you are in Rhode Island, things are not okay.
Yeah.
I didn't sleep last night because I sometimes don't sleep due to generalized anxiety, but I had very definite reasons to miss out on my 8 hours last night.
Yeah, I stayed up until about midnight Eastern time and then just kind of slinked away to bed. And it's that fitful sleep where, like, you just kind of pass out for a couple hours. And then I woke up at, like, 4:30 and was up until, like, 5:30. And then back to a fitful sleep for, like, another half an hour. And just, I don't know which stage of grief I'm in. It kind of feels like all of them put together. And they're giving me, like, a rear naked chokehold right now.
Yeah. For those of you listening to the show that have never followed a news story in your life,
God bless you.
God bless you. You really make metal amazing. Donald Trump has won the presidency, which is honestly a thing that I believed would never, ever happen. I was certain, completely dead set in my beliefs that this would be an easy victory for his challenger, Hillary Clinton. We were all proven hilariously wrong.
Way wrong, like way past the litmus test, which has been Dewey defeats Truman. This was like not on the presidential level, but like going down to like the Senate races and congressional, like it could be considered a blowout, really.
Definitely. This was in my mind a massive failure of the Democrats in general. I don't think it was as much a huge victory for the GOP because they didn't want this fucker in the first place.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think a lot of white rural America came out to vote for him. I think the last I checked, he won white women by 53%, which nobody was predicting that. Like, that's incredible.
And I think that gets to the heart of this altogether. He's not an evangelical.
Nope.
I would doubt that he's ever read a line of the Bible in his life. In fact, he's probably our first atheist president, which is not what I was hoping for.
Excluding self-worship.
Right, right. He's not a principled conservative. He does not appeal to the stated beliefs of the GOP. And moreover, he seems like he is a just vulgar moron.
A human dildo.
A human dildo, if you will. And yet, enough of the country decided, enough to give him an electoral advantage, that they would rather cut off their nose to spite their face than deal with... I honestly, I'm not sure what the Clinton campaign was promising other than perhaps more of the same that we currently have.
Well, unemployment's down, the economy was saved, Ford and GM are still around. I was more or less okay with more of the same compared to the alternative.
Well, I mean, I was too, you know, personally speaking, but I can easily see how a lot of the country wasn't. A lot of people in you know, you and I are in major cities.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people aren't, and they don't have the same kind of job opportunities in places where manufacturing and industry have taken a huge shit because, well, globalization has kind of ruined it for them. There's not a set path to a job. There's retail, fast food. Either way, you have unpredictable hours and a substandard minimum wage. It makes people feel less than dignified when they're not able to work to provide for their families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's valid too. I think that a lot of it is resentment too. There's the whole make America great again, take our country back. Back from who? Back from what? Back to when? Like, I'm pretty sure the 80s sucked for a whole lot of people. The 70s sucked for a whole lot of people. It's this, you know, beaver cleaver going back to a time that didn't really exist for a whole lot of, I don't want to say middle America, because that's not fair to generalize like that, but how about white America?
I think that a lot of people forget when the automotive industry in America began, you know, destroying itself by basically losing out to Japanese companies. There was a huge pushback in America of people being angry that Americans weren't buying American vehicles. They were buying Japanese instead because they were, to be honest, better cars.
Mm-hmm. And cheaper, too.
And cheaper, too. That is the way that globalization of industry has worked out. It's been replacing things that used to be made here because it just doesn't make sense to make them here anymore. And the mm-hmm. problem is that there's no longer a job for people that desperately need them. So I have no doubt that there was a racial resentment with a lot of Trump supporters. I mean, the alt-right is clear enough evidence of that. You've got these weeaboo Nazis all over the internet just thrilled right now that Trump is going to make America great again. I don't know exactly what he's going to do for these weeb Nazis who probably should have just been, I don't know, dashed against the rocks at birth because they have nothing to offer. There's not going to be a job for them. There's not going to be sudden acceptance in society for them. It's still going to be the same resentments and failures.
I don't want to be dramatic when I say this because I think a lot of people have been saying it recently, but it is really the way I feel, is that I'm deeply, deeply concerned and downright scared about what might happen. Not so much for me. You know, I think I'll be all right. You know, I have a job as of right now, white middle class guy in the Northeast, but I'm deeply concerned for women. I'm deeply concerned for Latinos. I'm deeply concerned for African Americans, LGBT, trans people. Like, everything that we assumed about what was going to happen in the election was going to be a step forward in progress. And if anything, it's a giant step back. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't expect gloom and doom apocalypse, but it's going to be a weird, long 4 years, if he even makes it to 4 years.
There has been an obvious simmering resentment in this country for people who feel left behind by this liberal progress that I thought we had all basically been making.
I think it's
going to get worse, but to not denigrate their plight at all, the people that are going to be hit the hardest by this, because it is deeply concerning. I am especially worried about any chance we had at addressing climate change,
mm-hmm.
which is a global catastrophe that is unfolding currently.
Yep. Climate change, education, women's health rights, immigration reform. Who the hell knows what's going to happen now? I've been thinking throughout the election, like, if Jeb Bush was the nominee and he won, I could have lived with it. If Scott Walker had won, I could have lived with it. Marco Rubio, like, I wouldn't have been happy, obviously, but they're like elected officials. They kind of understood how things worked and could compromise on something, and that's not going to happen with this guy.
No, and to be honest, we don't know what's going to happen, and that's perhaps the most terrifying aspect of it. I will say this, my prediction is that we're going to see a whole host of ghouls infest themselves in basically a kleptocracy. These people that have integrated themselves with Trump are ghouls, and nothing that happens here will be good. Rudy Giuliani is a fucking bastard.
Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, thank you for the save. Should have used that one on the Halloween show, man.
There'll be plenty of time next year. I don't know.
There is a small, perhaps chance that things could improve for some people, in that his speech this morning, Trump said that he would focus on improving infrastructure, which has been crumbling in America for many decades.
I think it's good to do. I am curious as how he's going to pay for it, since he's been talking about cutting taxes.
Right, and I don't foresee a new deal happening under Trump where we put Americans to work forming a civilian conservation corp. That's not, I don't see that being happened. I see it getting farmed out to corporations for massively inflated rates, similar to basically how Russia operates. Not to throw that fucking canard in there, but here we are.
Yeah, to the lowest bidder goes the spoils, and the highest bidder as well. I just had the thought that, like, filling his cabinet, we could get Sarah Palin leading up a department. You know, you have Rudy Giuliani, Chris Christie, Newt Gingrich, like, all of these mongoloids and these just human shitbags are going to be in charge of massive operations and massive departments that run the country. And now there's a Republican Senate, and there's a Republican-led House, and there's going to be Supreme Court choices. Like, where's the end of the hole, I guess?
Here is another way of thinking about this. Basically, the GOP could have ran anyone, and I think that they would have a better chance of beating Clinton. I think that she was the wrong candidate for the time. Hands down, this was a poor choice on the part of the DNC. So if she had pulled this out, if she had beat Trump, I foresee that she would have lost in 4 years to a Scott Walker or to a Marco Rubio.
I could have seen that. I mean, you know, who knows how 4 years play out, but that certainly makes sense to me. I mean, I know the only alternative really in the primaries was Bernie Sanders. And there are some Bernie Sanders supporters going, see, I told you, Bernie would have won. I don't see that as happening either, not through any fault of his own, but more of the same rhetoric that was guided towards Hillary Clinton would have been done to Bernie Sanders just in different ways. I mean, we've seen what's happened to a lot of Jewish reporters on Twitter. I can only imagine it would have been magnified 1,000 times for the first Jewish, you know, presidential candidate.
Well, I agree with that, but being Jewish is not a real concern that a critic could have of a candidate. And I think that any kind of...
His last ad was all coded anti-Semitic rhetoric. It was showing pictures of George Soros and Janet Yellen... talking about global conspiracies. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole with that, because I mean I understand what you're saying.
Right. This that is the Breitbartization of America,
yes,
which is
yes.
The alt-right. And
yes.
We need to be to quit being PC. We need to stop saying the alt-right and start calling them what they are: fascists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that starting now, being honest with our language, like the right has wanted all along. I'm going to make that move and start calling fascists.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems for Democrats is we've always been too nice in comparison. There's the saying, Republicans play to win and Democrats play to not lose, and I think that has to change in the next 2 to 4 years.
And I agree wholeheartedly. I will admit that I was a big Bernie supporter. I donated to his campaign. I saw him speak in person. A lot of his policies, the things he proposed, were wildly popular among both sides. Universal healthcare is wildly popular. Helping students pay for college is wildly popular. These are things that people want, and if we have any hopes of reining American society back in from this far right nightmare, it's going to be the left getting serious about these proposals and stop dicking around with things that no one cares about. I never want to see Lena Dunham ever again in my life. The fact that we would trot her out as an example to poor working class whites is unconscionable.
Yeah, well, you've been listening to All Things Considered on NPR.
Let's take a break. Let's listen to some angry music. When we come back, maybe we can calm down.
Yeah.
Distribution.
this is still ostensibly a show about metal. So I guess we should talk about metal, right?
I suppose so. Whatever makes the pain stop.
Yeah. You don't drink, because that that helps me a lot.
You could drink. I'll drive you around. It works out.
Perfect. It might be the most cliche and hack thing I've seen, because I've seen it repeated so many times over the last couple of days, that having this regressive government might make metal better again like it was in the 80s.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot.
Yeah, you know, metal's already good, man. Like, it's pretty good. Like, I think it's better now than it's ever been. I don't think that jeopardize the well-being of huge swaths of the country to get a really good thrash record.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, metal's been pretty good for the past decade or so, and there's more bands now than ever, and everything's sounding better quality. You could easily access stuff. I'd rather not destroy the country.
Yeah, even the throwback stuff, I feel a lot of it is in many ways eclipsing the original. I think I'd rather listen to Power Trip than almost any of the OG thrash bands.
You do love your Power Trip.
Man, those guys are so cool.
Well, hopefully they continue to be cool.
Yeah, they got a new record coming out early next year, so hopefully it's going to go hard in the paint. I believe immediately after that, Iron Reagan is dropping their new album, which is going to be a banger.
I've always liked what I've heard from Iron Reagan, but I always just think, like, why can't we just get more Municipal Waste?
Yeah, I love Municipal Waste. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we played them on the show today. But I think I like Iron Reagan even better now. The Fatal Feasts, I thought, was a fairly weak record, at least compared to The Art of Partying.
Mm-hmm.
More Reagan.
I'm partial to Hazardous Mutation. I'm curious, as someone who's a fan of both, why Iron Reagan over Municipal Waste? Just content wise, is just tired of all beer and just want half beer songs?
I loved Art of Partying because it was specifically one thing, and all the songs were really well crafted towards it. But I think that there's only so much room for pizza thrash.
Yeah.
I do like the half-serious, half-joking concept that kind of jives with my own personal beliefs a little bit better, you know?
Yeah, I can understand that. For some, you can only party so much.
That is true. I'm partied out, man. I just want to rage with actual rage.
With or against the machine, to be determined.
Yeah. Oh, God, I hope Rage Against the Machine doesn't come back.
Oh, it's going to happen now. It has to.
And that's just like fully cementing the capitalist dream of music, that you can play the hits that you wrote 20 years ago and just recover on them because people are like, man, things kind of suck right now. Hey, Rage Against the Machine used to write about that.
Now, we're going to get a whole new wave of Rage Against the Machine bands now, aren't we?
Fuck. No, rap metal is going to be, like, lit.
They're due.
It's going to be all over.
It's due. I mean, we're kind of sort of having a little bit of a new metal revival right now, so the rapping is just a few steps away.
We're always, just as we're always on the cusp of nuclear war, we're always on the cusp of a rap metal recovery.
That Stuck Mojo album is in the works.
No!
Head PE still puts out albums. It's going to happen.
Wait, really?
I'm almost positive that Head PE still puts out new albums, and I know for sure they still tour.
Huh. Wow, I had no idea. That is service journalism.
I think they actually tapped into the Juggalo market, Head PE, and have kind of been riding that wave, because they definitely like paint their faces now.
Oh, man, that reminds me. I don't think that W and I talked about it on the episode of the podcast where we mentioned our escapade seeing Insane Clown Posse. But while we were there, we saw a guy dressed up entirely, a big, stringy, awful goatee, face paint, giant pants, shirtless, makeup, the whole deal, just like Mudvayne in the Dig video.
Wow.
I know. I wanted to get a picture with him, and then I thought, it's kind of weird and creepy, but like he was also walking like with a weird hunch like he does in the video.
That's so odd. What year is it again?
I know. He was cosplaying 1998.
I don't know what to say. That good for him? He was happy?
Oh, yeah. He was having a whale of a time. I mean, no malice towards the guy. I'm just saying that's a baffling thing to do.
I just looked this up. Head PE put out an album this year.
Good Lord.
They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 albums.
And see, this is why I'm so out of touch with the American Electric. I'm not following Head PE.
They've put out like more albums in the past 6 years than Tool has in the past 20.
Heh, you burnt. So, let's see, a couple of big news items this week from what is one of the biggest metal slash hard rock bands in the world. That is, of course, Imshadow's own Avenged Sevenfold.
A7X. They put out their seventh studio album, The Stage, without warning. I think it's pretty cool that they did that. I think more bands kind of should do that. Just random shows, random albums, here's a song. But one of the drawbacks of doing that is, despite debuting at number 4 on the Billboard 200, they actually sold less albums than they did their previous album.
There is a question there from a purely economic perspective of how much did they lose in album sales that they saved in promotion costs?
I know they've been having label problems too. I think they're on Warner Brothers, and then they were suing them, and I think they're on Capitol now, something like that. So I don't know if that has something to do with saving money costs, probably for lawyers. But the question is then, without all the advertising, after the first week of sales, first couple weeks of sales, will they keep selling records?
That's a hell of a question. Much as we have no idea what the fuck Donald Trump is going to get up to, we don't know if A7X is going to keep moving those units.
I would be far happier if they sold more units than the alternative.
Right, right.
I'll buy one.
I saw so many people in the Toilet of Hell Facebook group being really surprisingly pleased with the record. So I decided to give it a shot. This is the first Avenged Sevenfold album I've heard in more than a decade. And I will say the first song is okay. It's not bad. And then the album goes on for like another hour.
I listened to the single they put out for the video, and it was all right. I'm not a fan of the band. I liked what they did on their old album, Waking the Fallen, when they were more of, I guess, Orange County core, metalcore type band. And then now they're just kind of butt rock / classic metal.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. You know, that song Hail to the King from their previous record used to come on all the time on the Sirius XM metal station that I had programmed in my car. I kind of liked it. It was fine.
I think their music hits that right down the middle sweet spot. They're like the Jimmy Fallon of music, where it's just fastball jokes right down the middle. Their songs are like right down the middle for the average metal fan who may not go as in-depth as we do on the Toilet of Hell website, but they still like to occasionally go to a show and drink expensive beer and take off their shirts and knock into each other.
I'm personally angry that these people exist and they don't listen to 12 hours of harsh noise a day.
They're missing out.
Really, like you don't know music until you realize that all music is shit. In addition to this record that they just put out by surprise, they've also got a new concert experience in store for their fans.
Virtual reality concert experience, a 3D, 360 degree live stream performance. So fans all over the world can watch them play their instruments and look out at a crowd.
Yeah, that's weird. You enjoy watching bands perform live, videos of it at least, right?
As long as it's good sound quality and good footage quality, sure.
Right. That's never something that I've gotten particularly into. So the idea of seeing Avenged Sevenfold concert in virtual reality from my couch doesn't seem all that much more appealing than watching a YouTube video of it at my desk, which is to say it's not appealing at all to me. I'm kind of not into it.
I think it works for people who wouldn't get a chance to see them. I can understand the appeal to that. I think the idea of 3D, 360, live stream, virtual reality stuff is really good on paper. It's like, yeah, that sounds like fun. That's great. But in practice, it sounds like it would give me a big headache.
Also in practice, the people that want to see Avenged Sevenfold can probably, pony up the money to see tickets when they come to a venue in their area, or they can't afford the VR experience to watch this concert anyway. Like, hails from Jakarta, nobody's going to be able to afford these Samsung VR sets to get the live concert experience anyway.
Yeah, come to Bratislava.
Yeah, so in a way, this is just more of slicing the fat off your wealthiest fans and kind of giving nothing to the rest of them.
I hope they pull a Frank Drebin from the first Naked Gun movie where he's wearing a microphone and goes to the bathroom and everyone could hear him. I hope someone from Avenged Sevenfold does the same thing, but with the VR goggles still on.
I hope that one of them can maintain the length of piss that Frank Drebin did in that movie. Still impressive to this day.
Followed by him missing and going, whoops.
Then farting loudly.
America needs more Naked Gun.
I fully agree. But if there was more Naked Gun, who would they cast in Leslie Nielsen's place since he's dearly departed?
Oh, they'd fuck it up. They'd do something stupid.
It'd be Adam Sandler, and you know it.
Oh, man, they would do, like, a prequel and have it be someone young, and it would be painful. I think those movies were definitely in their own time and place, and they would fuck it up right now.
It was a time when OJ was that friendly guy from the TV.
From all the Hertz commercials.
Yeah, that guy's great. The juice. So I don't foresee this 360 VR experience in any way threatening the kinds of bands that we generally post about. Nobody wants to do a VR 360 experience of going down to some shitty basement and getting covered in Coors Light.
I think the only way it would succeed would be one of these epic black metal performances like a Behemoth or a Mayhem, or where some sort of insanity is going on stage.
You know, that's a decent point. I don't know if either one of those bands can pull that kind of... Well, I guess they could in Europe.
Europe.
They would probably have the draw to do that.
And never discount the virability of these videos that can go online. Look, BuzzFeed, look at this crazy band with all these bloody pig heads.
I just got a great idea, and Mayhem owes me $1 million for it. But what if you could do a hologram Euronymous on stage reuniting with Varg, in which Varg kills him again?
How about instead of killing him again, he just tries to kill him in vain and is trying to, like, swing at the hologram, but it's not working?
Why will he not die?
Was ist los?
Yeah, so there you go. We've been providing people with a real service today, and the news that they most come to me and they demand. They want to hear us talk about politics and Avenged Sevenfold, so we're service journalism here, man.
So then we might as well keep it going. How about some Upon a Burning Body news?
Ooh, Upon a Burning Body, for those that don't remember, is a deathcore band from San Antonio that most famously pretended that their vocalist was kidnapped for a publicity stunt.
Through Twitter, I might add.
through Twitter. The response was nonplussed. People were not not too happy about this.
It was really weird and really creepy, and even their own label, Sumerian Records, was not happy about it. And then people got over it, and it just went away because everyone has a short attention span.
Well, I recall when that happened that kind of the death chorosphere, which is to say a bunch of bros, were like, yo, bro, not cool, not cool. Which, you know, is basically the most grave offense that you can have.
Well, they just put out a new album called Straight from the Barrio, and unfortunately it didn't sell all that well. Their last album sold close to 7,000 copies in its first week, and this album did half that, about 3,300 copies. And the vocalist, Danny Leo, who you may remember, pretended to kidnap himself, put out a little tweet saying, "People will buy a $10 cup of coffee, but MFs won't buy a record. Fuck free downloading."
That's funny. Whenever I see musicians complain about free downloading on the internet, it's generally people who whose relevance has waned long ago. In this case, it makes sense in that a deathcore band who is no longer riding the same highs of that particular wave and doesn't have a publicity stunt in their back pocket is suffering. It's not about the downloading, although that does affect a lot of artists, and it's kind of shitty that people do it. It's you, bro. It's you. You're continuing to follow this trend that's been dying for a long time.
Mm-hmm. The people that liked it 3-4 years ago have grown up and changed in those 4 years on top of that.
Yeah, man. They're getting earlobe reconstructive surgery.
And they're getting ready to start their rap metal band.
Oh, Christ. Welcome back, everyone. Glad you've stuck with us to this, the final segment of this show. Let's start with this. You played a song for us last week from a Melodeath band that I know our favorite Venezuelan half-elf loves, Dark Quiltility. Please tell me about the show that you went to see with them.
Oh, I am all about the Dark Quiltility. So, up in Worcester, Massachusetts.
That's spelled Worcestershire, right?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot more letters than how the locals actually pronounce it. And for those that have never been to the area. It only exists pretty much because of this venue and a couple other like convention centers and stuff like that. It's kind of a town that time has forgot. Like after the Industrial Revolution, jobs kind of never came back, but it still exists. It's the hub of nu metal and metalcore bands. A lot of bands will skip like Providence and will play middle of nowhere Worcester. So regardless,
how far away is it from you?
About an hour.
Oh, okay.
It's an hour, but it's one of those long hour drives where it's nothing for 55 minutes and then you hit the city. So it feels much longer.
Fantastic. That's a lot of fun.
It's especially fun in winter with these long, dark roads and ice and snow. And that's when all the good metal bands come over here because they're playing festivals over in Europe during the summer.
I'm a southerner. I've never really experienced a harsh winter. But the concept of having to drive for an hour in the dark on icy roads is enough to make me not leave the house.
Yeah, I've definitely missed shows with the threat of snow. Just be like, no, what? Not worth it. Not worth it. I'm staying home. But thankfully, it wasn't too cold when I saw this show. It was Dark Tranquility, Swallow the Sun, Enforcer, and Starkill. The doors opened at 7. I got there at about a little bit after 8:15. Starkill had already played, and I only caught a little bit of Enforcer.
Damn it.
So, yeah. I know, sorry. It was fun walking around seeing the 5 or 6 people who were clearly there for Enforcer because they had their thrash metal uniforms on.
Yeah, that's a total metal nerd band. That's a Randall Thor band.
Absolutely. It was an interesting crowd mixture because you could see the people there for Enforcer, the people there for Swallow the Sun, and everyone else who was there for Dark Tranquility. But it was a pretty good crowd, no problems. In the Worcester Palladium, it was in the upstairs. There's an upstairs and downstairs. There's an upstairs part of the upstairs where you could just stand and watch the show from the safety of a barrier. And by the time I got there, it was a line of people, so it was a little difficult for me to see. But I got to see all of Swallow the Sun. They were really good. They played about 7 songs, and they were super heavy. I got to where I was standing. I actually got to see the keyboardist the whole time. Have you ever actually seen this guy?
No, I've never seen him.
You have never seen someone so into their performance, especially for a keyboardist. I mean, he is just hitting those keys like they owe him money. He's bent over. He's making pained faces. It was thoroughly entertaining.
I did once see Styx, Dad Rock Alert. And their keyboardist, whatever his name is, he was doing all these tricks with his keyboard, like he was playing it upside down and flipping over. He was basically Jerry Lee Lewis. So, I mean, was he able to pull that off?
He didn't flip it, but he definitely like lifted it up on one side while holding down one key.
Nice.
So it was entertaining. You did just remind me of the time I went to the first Gigantor, the one with Dream Theater, where they played like an hour and a half. And the only entertaining thing about their entire set was their keyboardist would spin around sometimes. That was it.
I mean, that's pretty cool. I don't want to take that away from their keyboardist.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. But beyond that, the most exciting part of their set was when Megadeth's pyro went off.
For their set? Or mistakenly?
Yeah, because Dream Theater ended and Megadeth was starting.
Oh,
but
man.
That little pyro that went off was better than their entire set. But I digress.
By Back God, that's Dave Mustaine's music.
So Swallow the Sun was great. They're actually touring the U.S. again sometime in March with Amorphis. And they're coming even closer to me, like 10, 15 minutes away. So I'm definitely going to go see them again.
Nice.
Dark Tranquility was absolutely phenomenal. They played like 20 songs, a good hour and a half set. They actually played the song we played last week on our show, Therein, which I was pretty psyched about. The set list was from a whole bunch of their albums over the past 20 years. They played with backing videos the whole time, and they were kind of like lyric videos. So that was really neat to see. They were all really well done. And the band was super into it. The crowd was just going absolutely nuts for them on the floor. And you could tell the band was feeding off that because they looked like they were having a really good time. So if the show comes to your area, definitely go.
If they ever come to my area, I will do that.
Let Dark Quintility deep into your area. That's never going to stop being funny.
So yeah, we recorded our last show. Fuck, I guess it was last Wednesday. We're getting super late with our content here, because yeah, Wednesday again. Well, the weekend, while you were doing that, I made the trip to San Francisco and then to Oakland specifically, to catch a Raiders game, which, I've never done before, but I really wanted to do. For those that don't follow sports, the Oakland Raiders have a terrible, terrible stadium in Oakland that they will not be playing at next year. They are likely going to move to Las Vegas. It's some billion-dollar boondoggle of a stadium that is going to totally screw the taxpayers of Las Vegas, but I digress. This is their last season, likely as the Oakland Raiders. So me and my buddy decided to make the trip to go see them at their crappy old stadium as the Oakland Raiders. It just so happens that this season, unexpectedly, they are at the top of their division. They are 7-2, and for that game that we saw, they were playing a 6-2 Denver Broncos for Sunday Night Football, which is the biggest game of the week, pretty much.
It's shocking that both of them are good.
Yeah. So spoiler alert, well, I guess it's more than a week past it, so I hope this doesn't shock you too much, but the Raiders did win. It was a great, great victory for them. But the experience of the game itself was something that I wasn't entirely prepared for because I wasn't sure what to expect. Raiders fans are generally known as some of the most intense fans in sports. Their fans have a section in their stadium called the Black Hole, in which everyone dresses up. I heard that giggle. In which everyone dresses up basically as monsters, and a lot of them look like black metal fans with painted faces.
Spiked shoulder pads,
all kinds of creepy crawly creatures. And it looks pretty badass. I mean, they're all, you know, overweight 40-something-year-old dudes who probably don't pay their child support, but it looks pretty cool. And the experience of going there, I had never been to Oakland before, so we took the train from San Francisco, the basically technocratic playground for millionaires, with its beautiful vistas and fancy coffee shops, and took the BART train to Oakland, where we saw industrial nothing, factories that likely don't do anything anymore, and our stop dropped us off right outside of the stadium. Once you got off the train, you would walk up a concourse to the stadium. Folks that have never done this, this ramp up to the stadium was over what was essentially a junkyard. So we were walking for a good quarter mile over industrial waste and rubbish and tractors that don't work anymore. And in this concourse, there's barbed wire all over it. It looks like you're going to a maximum security prison with the giant concrete structure in front of you. The only thing that would, you know, throw you off is that the signs for the Raiders and the A's, and the A's, of course, also play in that stadium. So this was about 3 to 4 hours before game time, and we decided to explore the tailgate section, which was almost a fucking square mile of people getting drunker than you've ever seen in your life. We grabbed some beers of our own from the grocery store. We were both wearing Raiders gear as well, so as not to be harassed, which we definitely saw.
Good idea.
Yeah, the Broncos fans in attendance were pretty roundly mocked and harassed and yelled at. Some of it was good-natured. Some of it was from total drunk assholes who were trying to start fights, of which there were many. We saw many, many arrests at the stadium. It was overall a magical experience. We drank far too much, and we got the real experience of talking with Trump voters as well. To get, I don't know what brought it up. We were talking with folks and mentioned we were from Texas, and that brought Trump supporters out of the woodwork. I guess being in the Bay Area, you wouldn't see anything swayed for Trump.
So you've seen the Raiders Nation in person, and you've seen Juggalos in their natural environment. You're like a new Jane Goodall.
Yeah, I'm making it a mission to seek out and make contact with and try to build rapport with some of the most notorious groups in America. Next up, I'm going to go to an anime convention and try not to give everyone a wedgie.
Oh, you also got bronies, you got furries. What else can we do?
The alt-right. Oh, sorry, no. Fascists.
Fascist Nazi fuckwads.
I assure you I will not be making nice with the fascists, though. Bronies, I think you're a disgusting group of people. Everything about you is trash, but I will do my best to be friendly.
Oh, you got to do like Boston Red Sox.
All right, I don't know if I can do that, man. I don't know if I can handle the Patriots or the Red Sox.
Juggalos, yes. Patriots and Red Sox, no. I fully support that.
Everyone has their own prejudices. Some of them are more severe than others, as we've seen with this horrible, shocking backlash of an election. And I will admit that I am racist against Patriots fans. I don't trust them. I don't want them near me or my family. That's just the way I feel about it. And I stay armed so that they can stay away from me.
The only good thing about being around Patriots fans is that whenever the game is on a Sunday, all the supermarkets are empty.
That is nice.
I plan my day around it.
That's just smart business. Okay, we got like a couple minutes left. There was one other thing in the metal sphere this week that I felt we might as well address, briefly, because I don't know that it warrants more discussion than it's already received, due to the tireless wisdom of Neil Jameson of Decibel, which is the band Allegion, somewhat techish, somewhat proggish death metal band, who is well beloved by internet metal nerds, has basically said that they had some bad times, they were in a hole with their label, and they needed money, or they couldn't afford to keep doing this as a band. So they reached out to their fan base using Patreon and asked their fans to donate money to them to basically keep them solvent as a band and performing and recording and active. And they got it. Their fans came out and showed them support monetarily, which is the best thing that you could hope for as a band. This, in turn, infuriated traditionalists for reasons that I don't find immediately clear. We all complain that nobody makes money being in a band, and it's a shame that that's that way, that we wish that the bands that we love could, you know, get something out of it. And this one did, and for some reason that was not okay. Why do you think that is?
I don't quite understand why people were upset about it. They were just asking for their fans to help keep the band going. I mean, I think it's naive for people to think that most of the bands we listen to make enough money to support themselves full time. That's just not true.
Yeah, it's there's like 10 bands out there that can do that.
Yeah, and how is this really any different from a band having a tip jar at the merch table or please help our gas fund jar or something like that? It's more or less the same thing. You know, the band isn't being lazy. They're not like, please buy us a car. It's help us pay for new merch. Help us pay for recording. Help us, you know, allow us to keep our cell phones working. You know, they're not forcing anyone to give money. I don't know if just metal fans are all pull yourselves up by your bootstraps.
That is right exactly now. What I saw. And when asking for further justification, because Pull Yourself Up by the Bootstraps is a terribly myopic view on life. I saw people say that this was setting up a dangerous precedent for use of crowdfunding, which I vehemently disagree with. I think that's exactly what crowdfunding is there for, so that you can get your fans to support you.
Yeah, it's the opposite of a bad precedent. I think it's good. I think some bands that, you know, have been in financial troubles that may not want to express it, they just end up canceling tours or they go real quiet for a while. Maybe this will encourage them to be like, hey, you know, we need $20,000 to keep the lights on. Can you help us? If not, no big deal.
So Randall Thor is one of the people that disagreed with me severely. He was saying that basically this is the tragedy of the commons, and that if everyone asks for this, there won't be anything to go around. Randall's not here on this episode, so I can excoriate him as much as I like without him interjecting. Randall, you're wrong. You're extremely wrong. Fans have the free will to decide which bands are important to them and which bands are not as important to them, and they are free to use their own hard-earned money to support who they want to support. Not everybody will get the same, but that's the case in all of this. This is actually a meritocracy, if it were.
I think if this was available in the past, some bands we love might actually still be together, too.
I fully agree. So, that's my take on it. Man, don't be a hater. If somebody's succeeding, especially in a genre that has so much, so little limited appeal outside of a few thousand people in basically the extreme metal genres that we follow, support them. We should be happy for them, and we should hope that more bands follow suit, and that eventually we can find a way to help people make art for a living. I think that's a noble cause.
More bands, more music, more tours. These are all good things.
More stage dives, more riffs, more moshing.
More wiki-wikis in our metal.
No more wiki-wikis. No more wiki. Widdly-widdlies are fine, but keep them wiki-wikis out.
All right, we'll see what we can do.
All right, I think that's it. Anything else you want to add, dude?
Love each other.
Yeah, man. Be good to each other, seriously. Yeah. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.